Good morning. In today's daf Pesachim Ayin Vav, we're on the Mishnah 9 Hamad Beis. We're here in the 7th parak of Pesachim. We are in the middle of discussing roasting Karban Pesach. This parak is dedicated to the halachas of the actual roasting of the Karban Pesach. Again, as we pointed out already a couple of times, an unusual procedure that the Torah demands regarding a karban. In terms of how the karban is prepared, generally speaking, the Torah is not makpid in terms of how the karban is to be consumed. You can cook it, boil it, bake it. However, which way you prefer to eat the meat of a karban, nevertheless, when it comes to the Karban Pesach, so the Torah says it has to be eaten exclusively as a roasted product. As such, the first Mishnah back in Ayin Daled tells us that you have to roast it over an open fire. Can't come into contact with anything. In other words, there must be direct communication between the fire and the meat as you're roasting it. As such, so the Mishnah has a discussion about whether the intestines can even remain inside of the Karban Pesach. The Shita of Rav Yossi Aglili is that the intestines can remain inside. Rabbi Akiva says no, because if the intestines are inside, they're going to be cooking inside of the animal. That's Bishul. And again, the whole carbon has to be roasted. So this idea of roasting goes so far to the extent, according to Rabbi Akiva, that the intestines have to be removed from the inside of the carbon Pesach, actually put on top of the spit, meaning on the spit on top of the animal, and in order to be roasted directly over the fire. So with that stated, so with this halacha that the carbon Pesach has to be roasted, so our mission now, which we're about to begin, is going to be dealing with issues of what if parts of the Karban Pesach are not actually roasted? Meaning, let's say it was cooked, but in a non-roasting manner. What do you do with the Karban Pesach at that point in time? Okay, just one disclaimer in terms of today's daf. Today's daf has probably the most amount of halacha l'maisa concepts that come up in a daf. Again, I'm not going to quantify. I'm not saying that it is the most. But there is a lot of halacha l'maisa. And as such, there is much to discuss in terms of the practical halacha ramifications. But again, in the course of the daf yomi, so we're just going to familiarize ourselves with the daf, with the concepts, and it's just the beginning in terms of understanding halacha l'maisa. Let's start with the Mishnah. Naga b'chaso shel tanur. So let's say there was a negiah. What happened was the Karban Pesach touched the walls of the oven. The walls of the oven now are going to facilitate and help cook that one area which it touched. Now that's going to be a problem. Generally speaking, what's the big deal if it touches the walls of the oven? So under normal circumstances, it's no big deal whatsoever. The problem is that you need sliasha. It has to be roasted on a fire. And so therefore, this one part of the Karban Pesach that touched the walls was not roasted in the fire, but rather cooked by the walls of the oven. So what do you have to do? Yiklof is mekamos, so you have to do what's called a kedei klipa. Kedei klipa is removing a thin layer where there was contact between the Karban Pesach and the walls of the oven. So take off that surface area, and that would be sufficient, that would be fine. Not of mir v'ola cheres v'chazrei lav, yitol is mekamo. Next halach in the Mishnah is as follows. Let's say a drop of the Karban Pesach, in other words, there is liquid fat, and a drop of the Karban Pesach now falls onto the wall of the oven and then bounces back onto the Karban Pesach. So here now, so you have the following. That drop that fell onto the wall of the oven now has been cooked by the walls of the oven. In turn now it has gone back into the Karban Pesach, cooking that area. And since it now cooked that area, and because it's a liquid, it's a drop of liquid, so now we're going to say that the penetration of that liquid went a little bit more, yitos makomo. So the Mishnah says that what you're going to have to do is not just take off the surface area, but rather what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to go and take off a little bit more, a kedei netila, which is about an inch. Take off of an inch in terms of where the drop landed. Next halach in the Mishnah, natof miradva ala soles, yikmotzes makomo. Let's say a drop falls on solas, on flour. Now this case, as it stands right now, is a little bit difficult to understand. A drop of the Karban Pesach falls on flour, and then in turn goes back in, and lands back on the Karban Pesach. So you have to be komitzes makomo. You have to remove a kamitzes worth of the area in which it came into contact with. Stay tuned. We're going to understand this better in just a little bit, and when we get to the Gemara, sacha b'shem and truma. So what if you rub Shemen Truma onto the Karban Pesach? Now, Shemen Truma is only allowed to be consumed by the is only allowed to be consumed by Kohanim, not by non-Kohanim. So Sachar v'Shem and Truma. So now you are rubbing the Shem and Truma onto the Karban Pesach. Himchav versus Kohanim Yochelu. So if the group of Kohanim, if the Bnei HaChabur are made up of just Kohanim, that's fine. They're allowed to eat Truma. So now that you take the Truma oil and rub it into the Karban Pesach, that's fine. Imshal Yisrael. So now if it was a Karban Pesach where those registered were Yisraelim, obviously not allowed to eat Truma. Imchayhu Yidichenu. Now if the animal was raw at the time when you rub the Truma oil in, so there was no penetration, meaning without heat, there's just simply, it's everything superficial, and so therefore you just rinse it off, and that would be fine. However, however, if it was in fact roasted, so now yiklof is a chitzon, so what you have to do is a kedei klipa, you just simply take off the surface area. So let's say what you rub is maaser sheni oil in. One of the members of the chabur brought in their maaser sheni oil into Yerushalayim. Remember, maaser sheni, you're taking off after the maaser rishon in the first, second, fourth, fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. You bring it to Yerushalayim. You're allowed to eat in Yerushalayim. You're only allowed to eat in Yerushalayim. So you brought in your maaser sheni oil, and you said, okay, so what a wonderful way to use it. Put it on your Karban Pesach. So lo yasen adam ema b'nei chabur she'in po de maaser sheni b'Yerushalayim. So here's what you can do. You can't go to the other members of the chabur and say, look, I brought the maaser sheni oil. As much as I'm a nice guy, I also like some compensation. You can't charge. You can't charge for that maaser sheni oil because effectively what you're doing is you're going to be redeeming maaser sheni in Yerushalayim, and you can't do that. Now, we talk about pidyon maaser sheni all the time, but that's outside of Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim itself, one is not allowed to be podeh maaser sheni in Yerushalayim, so therefore you can't charge for the oil, and everyone's going to enjoy the Karban Pesach with the maaser sheni oil, and all the other members of the chabur do not have to pay. Okay, let's begin with the Gemara. As we went through the Mishnah, ran through the Mishnah, so the Mishnah gives us a number of scenarios where you had contact between the Karban Pesach, the walls of the oven, a drip falling off the Karban Pesach going on walls in the oven. And what we don't have in the Mishnah is a lot of context. What's hot, what's cold. And so here we begin one of the more fundamental discussions in terms of Yerodeya. And Itmar, the Gemara, has the following discussion. Cham aso cham, divrei hakol aser. If I have hot going into hot, so according to everyone, it's going to be aser. Rashi over here, first Rashi in the Gemara, gives the following example. Basar roseach leso chalav. So let's say I have hot meat that falls into hot milk. Oh, echad shel iser ve'echad shel heter. It doesn't matter what we're discussing over here. Either we're talking about basar b'chalav or we're talking about iser ve'heter. But if the two items are hot, and one hot item goes into another hot item, so what do we have? So according to everybody, we have what's called iser. We have an absorption. It was boleya. So as a result of that, so now you've created basar b'chalav. Now the iser now is penetrated into the heter, and the whole thing is going to be aser. Good. So that is a full-fledged bliya according to everyone. Sonin l'soch, sonin divrei hakol mutter. Now if both items are cold, so then according to everyone, it's going to be mutter. Because there you have no transfer of taste whatsoever. You simply take the piece of meat, the cold meat that fell into the cold milk, and you pull it out. You rinse it off, and you pull it out. Now, in terms of practical halacha, again, like I said in the beginning of today's shiur, there are other considerations as well, whether the meat has cracks and crevices in which the milk goes in. So it's not as simple as we are presenting it right now. But in the meantime, however, just the basic idea, the basic concept, in that with cold, there's not going to be transfer of taste, and therefore it's going to be mutter. Cham l'soch sonein, v'sonein l'soch cham. Okay, so if it's cham l'soch cham, so there's a bliya, and it's going to be usr. If it's sonein l'soch sonein, there's no bliya, and therefore it's not going to be usr. Those are the points of agreement. Here's where we get to a point of contention, and that is hot goes into cold, or cold goes into hot. Rav amar yila gavar, Shmuel amar tasa gavar. So we have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel in terms of what is going to dominate. Is it that which is coming in, or is it that which is being penetrated? So according to Rav, so yila gavar, that which is on top is going to be dominant. So that means to say that according to Rav, if the item that is hot goes into something that's cold, so therefore yila gavar, the item on top is going to be dominant, and therefore what you have now is heat, and therefore you have a transfer of taste. And conversely, according to Rav, if let's say the item that is going in is cold and the item on the bottom is hot, so therefore we say, according to Rav, ila agavar, that which is coming on top is going to dominate, the top item is cold, and therefore there is no transfer of taste. That's according to Rav. Mashahenkein, according to Shmuel amar tasagavar. And Shmuel's of the position that tasagavar, which means that everything we said for Rav, but just flipped. Meaning, according to Shmuel, it's always going to be the bottom that's going to dominate. If something hot goes into something cold, there's not going to be a transfer of taste, because according to Shmuel, tasagavar, that which is below is going to be dominant. On the other hand, if that which goes in is cold and the bottom is hot, so therefore there is going to be transfer of taste because tasa agavar, the bottom is going to be dominant. Good. So we have over here a really basic machlokes between Rav and Shmuel in terms of hot going into cold, cold going into hot. So which one is going to be the dominant? And here Rashi writes. Rashi, really interesting, couple times in today's daf. So Rashi, paskins halacha lemaisa. It's not Rashi's general MO. What Rashi generally does is he's masbir the Gemara, explains the Gemara on the daf, and it does not compare one Gemara to another, it doesn't paskin halacha. Rashi is a perush. Rashi is a commentary. But nevertheless, on today's daf, so on a couple occasions, he paskins here, Shmuel amar tasah gavar. Rashi writes, hilka cham asoch sonim mutter, v'sonim asoch cham aser. So according to Shmuel, the cham goes into cold, so there's no transfer of taste. Cold going to hot, there will be. Rashi writes that generally speaking, then when it comes to Issur V'Heter, we pass on like Rav. That's generally true. So Rashi writes over here that the halach over here falls like Shmuel. Why? Da'atanya tarki mafitz and gavase kigalakaman. Because later in our sugya, as we get to the bottom of this first amud, so we're going to see not one but two brises that are going to be passing like Shmuel. So being that the Gemara presents two brises that clearly follow the position of Shmuel, so that tells us that the halacha falls like Shmuel, says Rashi. Good. So and the Shulchan Aruch also passes like Shmuel as well. But it just I'm just pointing out in terms of the daf that we're going to find a couple of times today an unusual role played by Rashi, and that Rashi here is the posek. Rashi was the posek in his community, but generally speaking, he does not translate that to his parish on the Gemara. We are in the Gemara. We are on 9 Vav Amud Aleph. We are three lines from the top. The Gemara now is going to try to bring proofs back and forth whether or not Rav's position, Ilagavar, or Shmuel's position, Tasagavar, seems to be the more correct position. What we're going to be doing, before we get to the two brises, we know we have two brises coming up. Rashi already taught us. But before we get to that, the Gemara is going to critically read, we're going to be Medayik, in the Mishnah to see whether or not Rav or Shmuel's position is in fact the correct position. It's going to happen to be that all proofs seem to point towards the position of Rav, which certainly is interesting because we just learned together that Rashi passing like Shmuel, the Brises are going to pass like Shmuel. But anyway, Tanan, let's take a look at our Mishnah. Meaning because our Mishnah over here seems to speak to this idea of whether or not we say Ila Agavar Tasa Agavar. Tanan, we learned that a Mishnah not of Mirvoa Al-Kheres V'Chazar Elav Yitol's Mekama. So we had a drip falling off the Karban Pesach, landing on the walls of the oven. Then from there, it bounced back onto the Karban Pesach. So we have to do is we have to take off a Kedei Netila. An inch of the Karban Pesach now has to be shaved off, more than just shaved off. You have to cut off an inch of the Karban Pesach in the area where there was contact between that drop and the Karban Pesach. Now, Kasak Adacha Becher Sonenes, so the Gemara telegraphs exactly what the thought process is. We think at this point in time that the oven wall is in fact cold. Now, Bisham al Rav Damar Ila Gavar. So according to Rav now, it works out. It works out perfectly. Mishum Hachi tells Mekama, do you know why you need to take off a Kedei Netila? The Azarote Merasech Lecheres. Because here's what happened. We're going to reconstruct now exactly what happened. So a drop falls off. Now the drop is coming off of a very hot Karban Pesach. And so that means that the drop itself is hot. And it hits the cold wall. The Hadar Cheres, I'm sorry, and the Da'azarote Merasechle Lecheres. And what does it do? So according to Rav, we say Ila'a Gavar. So that which is coming in is going to be the dominant. So that means the drop now, which is hot, is going to dominate. It's going to cook the walls of the Cheres. The walls of the Cheres, in turn, are now going to cook up the drop. Now, when I say cook the drop, I mean instead of doing sli to that drop, now it's going to convert it over to bishul to that drop. Then that drop is going to go back to the Karban Pesach, but it's not a drop of sli anymore. It's a drop of bishul. And that's why you need kedei netila. The Gemara spells all this out. And now as this drop hits the Karban Pesach, kamat ve pesach machmas chamimusa decheres. So that area now where the drop fell on the Karban Pesach is now received its heat from the walls of the cheres. So that drop no longer is a roasted drop. That drop now is a davar acher drop. Right? I call the bishul, right? It's, or the Gemara here just simply describes it as davar acher. Either way, the point is it's no longer tzliyesh. And therefore, you have to take off the kedei netila. All this works according to Rav. But again, the Gemara points out that's assuming that the walls of the oven are in fact cold. Ela l'shmul damar tasa gavar, but according to Shmuel, who says tasa gavar, so cheres came in the tzonin who akure maker le lerotev. So I don't understand. If the walls of the oven are in fact cold, so the drop of the Karban Pesach that falls on the walls of the oven, so it's going to cool everything down. So Amayi tells Makoma, so when it drops, when it bounces back onto the Karban Pesach, you don't need to take off a kedei netila because there was no penetration. That drop is not a bishul drop. It has not been converted from a tzli to a bishul drop. So the Gemara says, "Kedam Rav Yirmi Amar Shmuel Besolz Roseches Hachanami Becheres Roseach." So in a moment, we're going to see together that Rabbi Yirmiya gives an ukimta in a later case about the flour being hot flour. We don't understand that right now, but the point is that the assumption is that we're talking about where it's a hot item. Here too, the Gemara says, we're just going to simply change our assumption. We assume that the wall of the oven was cold. The wall of the oven is in fact hot. Since the wall of the oven is hot, so when the drop of the Karban Pesach now hits the hot wall of the oven, so according to everybody, there's going to be a bliya, there's going to be a transfer. And now that drip is no longer a roasted drip, but now it's going to be a cooked drip going back into the Karban Pesach. And that's why there's going to be a problem. The answer is very simple. The wall of the oven is not cold, but rather it's hot. And therefore, it doesn't prove either position. Tanan, this is going to be our second attempt to prove. Natav mirodvo, al hasolas yikmots es mekomo. So if, in fact, you have a drip that goes onto the solas, so you have to do a komates es mekomo. You have to take off a part of the Karban Pesach. Now, hasakadach besolas sonens. So again, the Gemara here telegraphs the assumption. And that is that we assume that the flour in question over here is cold. And bishlam ala rav damar illa agavar. Now, according to Rav again, we're going to reconstruct the case based on this assumption. And now it certainly would seem to prove Rav's position. Misham hachi kmotzes makama demaratech le'solas, because what happens is that when the drop falls onto the solas, the drop is assuming to be hot. The solas is cold. According to Rav, illa agavar. So what happens now is that the drop is going to heat up the flour. The hadar hudrana vahadra solas umiraseches le lididei. And now what's going to happen is that in turn is going to then cook up the drop. And the kamat ve rotev machmas chamimusa de solas v'rachmana amar tzliyesh v'lo tzli machmas davar achir. And now what's happening is that the drop has been converted from a roasted drop to I'll call it a cooked drop. Not exactly clear the best way to describe it, but again, it's davar achir. It's no longer roasted. So the Gemara says, and now it comes out that it hits the Karban Pesach, and now you have a blia, a small amount of blia of this drop into the Karban Pesach, which this drop is no longer considered a roasted drop. But Elo Shmuel Damar Tasa Gavar, but according to Shmuel, solos came into Sonenes who a kure kamak kamekerle. So if the flour is in fact cold and the drop of the Karban Pesach is now landing on cold, according to Shmuel, what happens? So what happens is no transfer of taste. We say tasa agavar, which means that the drip itself should not have been cooked up. So lama liik motzes makamos. So why do I need to remove any part of the Karban Pesach? So Amar Rav Yirmiya, Amar Shmuel besolos rosachas. So Shmuel says, yeah, but the we're just going to change the assumption, and that is that the solos that we're discussing over here is in fact to be boiling hot solos. So now the Gemara does this again. We have over here another Mishnah, Sacha b'Shemen Shel Truma. If let's say we rub Shemen Shel Truma onto our Karban Pesach, Im Chaburz Kohanim Yochlu, if it's a group of Kohanim, they can eat it, Im Shel Yisrael. So what if the group, the Chabura, are not Kohanim? So Im Chayhu Yidichenu, so if it's raw, you just simply rinse it off. Im Slihu Yichlof Esachitzam. Now, if it is roasted, the Karban Pesach is roasted, so what you have to do is take off a kedei klipa. Now, bishlam alarav, so here we go a third time now, where the simple reading of the Mishnah seems to support Rav. Bishlam alarav damar ila agavar, who says that that which comes in is going to dominate amatla hachisagale beklipa. Mishum di ila atzone. We're assuming that the truma oil is cold. So when you're introducing the cold oil onto the Karban Pesach, so again, what does Rav's position tell us? Ila agavar, that which comes in is going to dominate. That which goes in is cold. And so therefore there's no transfer. Now, I say no transfer. We just saw together that you have to remove a kedei klipa, just the thinnest superficial layer off the Karban Pesach. Even according to Rav, you have to assume something happened, but still, there is basically no transfer. So Ella Shmuel, but according to Shmuel, Damar Tasagav, Kev Dechamu Mivla Bala. But according to Shmuel, it is difficult to understand, right? Even if the truma in fact is cold, but we're going to assume that the Karban Pesach is hot. And when I'm taking the cold truma, I'm putting it into the Karban Pesach, rubbing it into the hot Karban Pesach. According to Shmuel, aren't we not talking about a full transfer? So my sagale beklipa. So why would a kedei klipa be enough? It's seemingly we're talking about nitzar legamre. We should have a full isser, full bliya, full transfer going from the truma into the Karban Pesach. So shani sicha de mashu ba'amahu de avida. So the Gemara says, okay, but you're rubbing only a thin layer of oil into the Karban Pesach. So according to Shmuel, tasa gavar, the Karban Pesach, the ha Karban Pesach is in fact going to dominate. And if we were putting in a lot of oil, so enachinami, so you would be right. Under those circumstances, certainly, there would be transfer. But we're talking over here just about a light rub of the oil onto the Karban Pesach. And it just happens to be that you're not using a lot of oil. And so therefore, its level of penetration is just going to be a very small amount of penetration, only kedei klipa. Good. So what we have done so far is presented the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel, whether we say Ila Gavar or Tasa Gavar, according to Rav, Ila Gavar, according to Shmuel, Tasa Gavar. We have now read three excerpts of our Mishnah, each one of them seemingly going like the position of Rav, the Ila Gavar, but in all three occasions, the Gemara defends the position of Shmuel. And on top of that, here comes our two brises. Rashi already told us about these two brises coming up. Tanya Kavasi de Shmuel, we have one brisa following Shmuel, and that is Cham Asor Cham Asor. So here the brisa starts off, just like we started off our discussion. If Ha goes into Ha, so then there's a full transfer of taste. V'chein sein, etzonin shenosin l'so Cham Asor. And here, we could stop right here. Obviously, we'll continue. But we could stop right here. The brisa says it exactly like Shmuel. Cold goes into hot. We're looking at Isser. It's a transfer. Chamasoch sonein. But if I have hot going into cold, it's only soch sonein. Or cold going to cold, mediach. So there, you just simply have to rinse it off because there was no penetration. There was no absorption of taste. Chamasoch sonein, mediach, came into chamu. Now, the Gemara over here, even according to Shmuel, where hot goes into cold, and we say that the tasa, that which is the base, is going to dominate, but still the Gemara says, hadacha, all you need to do is just rinse it off. This is the Gemara asking the question. Well, since you have hot going into cold, ad the maker lay, so it's true that the cold is going to dominate and the heat is going to cool down. But as it's cooling down, e efshar de lo bala porta. There's got to be just a little bit of transfer. Klipa miani baye. So you should take off just a small thin layer. So the Gemara says, Ela Ema. So the Gemara says, you know what? The point is so good. You're right. Chamas or chsonein. When the hot goes into cold. So kolef. So then you have to do a kedei klipa. So we have to assume that, yes, it's true that the cold is going to dominate. Yes, it's true that there was no full transfer, but there was just a small transfer, a kedei klipa. So let's chsonein. And then the next part of the brisa, we're going to leave as it is. Mediach. You just simply need to rinse because there was no transfer whatsoever, and a simple rinsing would be enough to solve for the problem. Tanya Idach, we learned in another brisa. Basar Rasech Shenafal So Chalav, This is going to be Braisa number two, which again clearly is going to support the position of Shmuel. You have hot meat going into chalav rosech, into hot milk, v'chein tzonin shenafal socham, or the cold meat going into hot milk. So usher, under those circumstances, is going to be usher, because again, the Braisa here is supporting and holding by the position of tasa gavar. Cham v'soch sonein, hot going into cold, v'tzon v'soch sonein, or cold into cold, mediach. So there, all you need to do is just rinse, because there was no transfer, there was no blia. Here, the Gemara, again, makes the same, well, I'm sorry, cham v'soch sonein, mediach. So, the Gemara over here is going to be making the same observation they made before, which is that even if I say tasa gavar, and the hot going into cold, there was no transfer of taste, but still, it'll take a moment for the hot to cool down. And the Gemara asks exactly the same question. So the Gemara says, you're right. Exactly the same point that we made previously, which is that when hot goes into cold, so it's true, the cold is going to dominate. It's true. There wasn't a full transfer of taste, but still, it takes a moment for the hot to cool down, and so therefore you have to take off a kedei klipa. Adkan, that takes us to the end of our first sugya of our morning, almost covering the entirety of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and that is whether or not we say ilah gavar, tasa gavar, and over here we could say definitively. Generally speaking, we pass on like Rav, but over here we just learned two brises that clearly support the position of Shmuel, and that is tasa gavar. So when hot goes into cold, we say that there was not a full transfer of taste. We also learned at the end of the sugya that it'll take a moment for the hot to cool down, and so therefore you have to remove a kedei klipa. Good. Adkan, that takes us through our first discussion of this morning. Continuing. Amamar tzon l'soch tzon mediach. Cold going into cold. Hadacha. You have to just simply rinse it off. In other words, because both items are cold, so therefore there was no transfer of taste, there was no penetration. Amar avun l'oshanu alu shalom malcho. Ava malcho asar. So Shmuel says, yeah, but that's in the absence of salt. But if there is salt, and as we're going to see in just a moment, we're talking about a lot of salt, so then there's going to be penetration. Why? Because we have two things that substitute for heat. One is salting. Salting is like roasting. Two is soaking. Soaking is like cooking. So when you have either salting, so that will be a substitute for roasting. In other words, it creates a reaction in which it basically will create penetration. It'll create blia. And the same thing is true regarding soaking. Soaking also creates a blia as well. Rashi's consistent about this point throughout Shas. When Rashi describes kavush, the soaking, so Rashi says in vinegar, right? It seems pretty clear from Rashi that soaking in water by itself does not create a transfer. Only has to be soaking in vinegar. So many Rishonim are not in line with Rashi on this issue. Okay, again, like I said, we're just scratching the surface in terms of halach lamaisa, but just pointing out highlights from the daf. Amar Rav Ahad Amar Shmuel Melech Harei Koreseach. This statement of Shmuel that salting is like roasting. Lo Amar Nele Shlo Nechamach Mas Mocha Aval Nechamach Mas Mocha Lo. That's only if you are salting a serious salting, right? Rashi describes it as salting it in order to remove the blood, right? Where there, you're going to be bathing it in salt. So that's the kind of salting that's going to create transfer of taste. But if all you're doing is just salting to taste, so that's not going to create a transfer of taste. The Gemara tells the following story. So there was a bird, right, that fell into kimcha. Kimcha, Rashi describes over here as being kutach. So in other words, it fell into cheese dip. So Shai Rav Chinna Berei De Rava Mi Pasrunya. So Rav Chinna said, it's mutter, it's fine. Amar Rava Man Chacham Lemishrei Milsa Ki Ha. And Rava says, that's a posek, right? That's impressive. Ilav Rav Chinna Berei De Rava Mi Pasrunya De Gavar Rabahu. He says, look, Rav Chinna, he's a Gavar Rab, he's a great man, he's got broad shoulders, and he can issue a psak like that. So Amalcha Ki Amar Shmuel Maliach Harei Koreseach Shei Nechamach Mas Mocho. Hai Nechamach Mas Mocho. So he says like this, look, I know the bird was salted, but salted, not bathed in salt, it was only salted to taste. And yes, we do have to take into account the position of Shmuel, that salting does create a transfer of taste, but it has to be a significant amount of salt. Over here, when the bird fell into the kutach, into the cheese dip, so we're talking about only a nominal amount of salt. It was only salting to taste, and therefore it does not create a transfer of taste. And this posek, Rav Chinana, so he understood that distinction, and that's why he said that you just simply pull the bird out. Obviously, you rinse the bird from whatever of the cheese dip is on it. But then after that, you're allowed to eat it. Now, mind you, by the way, we're talking obviously about where the bird is cold and the cheese dip is cold. And the reason why we're even considering a transfer is because of the amount of salt. But again, that's what Rav Chinana points out, that because the amount of salt is minimal, so therefore it doesn't create a transfer of taste. V'hani milichai, the Gemara says, now this is talking about if in fact it is raw. Avat sli by klipa, but if it is roasted, so then it requires a klipa. Now, it's not perfectly clear from the Gemara when the Gemara says if it is roasted. If it is roasted and still hot, probably, well, it's really hard to say. And the Rishonim debated. But probably what the Gemara means is that it was roasted and they cooled down. But still, because it was roasted, what does that mean? It's a little bit softer and a little bit more eligible to create some absorption. And that's why you need a kedei klipa. V'lo amar nela deles bepile. Now, let's say it is not a smooth surface in terms of the chicken or whatever the bird is, but let's say it's got a lot of cracks in it. We're not worried about penetration if there are no cracks. Aval ispepile, but if there are cracks, so usser. So then we're going to assume that the milk and the cheese went into the cracks, and now we're talking about a transfer. Not because of heat, but just simply because what happens now is that the milk and the dip now is going to be penetrating into the cracks. The matuva batavli elsar. Now, if there are a number of spices on the bird, so then it's going to be elsar. Rashi writes over here, barguzla batavli elsar, de tavli merachechele. The way Rashi describes it is that basically when you put a rub on it, so what's going to happen is that it's going to soften it. Umaitse ubale lekutcha, making it more sensitive and more eligible for to have a penetration of the dip, of the cheese dip. And it happens to be that over here, the bird is cold, right? Rashi's position over here is very clear that in these circumstances that we're describing over here, we're assuming that the bird is in fact cold. Okay. That takes us now to our second big topic of discussion, which we just concluded. And that is melich kereseach, that salting is like roasting, and kavish kemavushal, and soaking is like cooking. Again, many, many practical halachic ramifications that come out from it. We're gonna continue in the daf. Amarav. Okay, as we now turn to the Amud Beis. Basar shchuta shamin shetzalim in basar nevela kachush. Aser. Okay, what we're describing over here now are two meats being cooked in an oven together. And so here we have now our next really big topic of discussion in the course of today's daf, and that is, what happens in an oven? Is there going to be a transfer in an oven? Based on what? Meaning, are they touching one another? Well, if they're touching one another, so then there's going to be a transfer because that's cham b'socham. Although you do need some sort of medium to transfer the taste, but that's not what we're discussing right now. As will become clear from the Gemara, Rashi over here says it as well, that the consideration over here is the aroma. When I have two pieces of meat, or for that matter, any two foods being cooked in an oven simultaneously, so the Gemara now wants to know whether or not the aroma from one is going to go into the other food and create a transfer of taste. And under certain circumstances, as we're about to lay out, it's going to create problems. So, basar shchuta shamein shetzalo im basar nevela kachush. Let's say what I have over here is a fatty piece of meat that I roast in the same oven. They're not touching one another, but they're roasted in the same oven together with basar nevela, with non-kosher meat. And it happens to be that the kosher meat is fatty, the non-kosher meat is very lean. Still, it's going to be aser. My taima mefatme mehadade. Because what happens is they fatten each other up. The way Rashi describes it over here, the Gemara is going for maximum chiddush. And the way Rashi describes it over here, the chiddush is like this. We're going to say like as follows. Aroma is going to be transferring but only from fatty foods to other fatty foods, meaning there is no aroma really coming from lean foods. So there needs to be a fat content within the food in order for the aroma to waft and to travel. And over here, the way Rashi describes it, when I have the kosher meat in the oven being the fatty meat, so what is going to happen now is that it's going to, through its aroma, fatten up the lean meat. So now the lean meat, which is non-kosher, is no longer considered lean halachically, but that now is going to be considered fatty. In turn, that now new fatty piece of meat is going to send its aroma back to the basar shchuta, to the kosher meat, and therefore create a transfer of taste. That is how Rashi describes it. The Gemara over here is going for maximum chiddush, in that we're saying now reich travels in two directions, from the fatty meat to the lean meat, making it now quote-unquote fatty, and then from the lean meat back to the fatty meat, and so therefore what we have now is a full transfer of taste. This is all according to the Shita of Rav. Levi Amar, Levi's of the position of filo basar shchuta kachush, shit saloim basar nevelo, shamein mutter. Levi says that no, there simply is not going to be a transfer of taste. Reach, the aroma is not going to be a vehicle in which it's going to transfer taste from one to another. And even if it is the non-kosher which is fatty, and the kosher which is lean, where over here you only need one travel, right? It's not back and forth. It's just simply in one direction. Still, it's going to be motor. So my time recha ba'amahu v'recha lav milsehu. Recha lav milsehi. So, and the explanation of Levi. So Levi says, we're just talking about recha over here. And recha is not a significant vehicle in terms of transferring taste. Avid Levi uvda bar reish galusa, bigediva davar acher. And Levi actually paskin. What happened in the house of the reish galusa is that in one oven where they were cooking together was goat and pig. And the shali went to Levi, and Levi says it's fine. It's rather remarkable. First of all, why in the world are they roasting a pig in an oven of the Reish Galusa? But I imagine one of the slaves, one of the servants that was not Jewish, whatever the case was, they were not touching one another. They were being cooked in the oven at the same time. And Levi says, Reicha, aroma simply a non-factor, and therefore it's going to be it's going to be mutter. So it'll be fine. Meisvei, the Gemara is going to be challenging. Ein solon shnei pesachim keachem im me'atai rovis. So here we have a brisa. It's a tosefta. And the tosefta says that one is not allowed to roast two carbon pesachs, because what's going to happen is that there's going to be confusion. Now, I say confusion, by the way. I kind of gave away the Gemara's answer. But right now, my lav tarovis tamen. Right now, at this point in time, what the Gemara is assuming is that I'm roasting them in one oven together. So what you're going to have now is a blending of the tastes. And v'kashir l'levi, and that's going to be difficult for Levi. What's wrong if the Karm Pesachs are blending tastes one with another? Meaning it's both kosher, isn't it fine? So as Rashi points out over here, under normal circumstances, it's fine. But remember, Karm Pesach can only be consumed by those registered over the Karm Pesach. If I have now the taste of one Karm Pesach, which infuses into another Karm Pesach, so then you're going to be eating ta'am of another Karm Pesach, which you are not registered to eat. Okay, so that's the way Rashi describes the problem over here. So we see over here that seemingly there is a transfer of taste, and that now is difficult because Levi says that Recha Lav Milsehi. So the Gemara says, Lo Mimnei Ta'arovas Gufin. So the Gemara says, no, we're not worried about the transfer of taste, we're worried about the transfer of the Karm Pesach. Meaning if we're roasting our Karm Pesach in the same oven, and we didn't label whose is whose, so what may end up happening is that we may pull out from the oven the wrong Karm Pesach, meaning the one that was for the other Chabura, not for our Chabura. So, Hachinami Mistabe Mediktani Seifa Afilu Gediva Tlev. And this really is the better shot in the Brisa, because the Brisa says that this would be true even if we're talking about one group is using a goat and the other group is using a sheep. Remember, two types of animals are candidates for the Karm Pesach. One is a goat, the other is a sheep. So over here, you're worried about confusion. Our Karm Pesach is a goat. Your Karm Pesach is a sheep. It's easy to tell the difference. The Braisa says, even in that case, don't roast them in the same oven. So now, if we're talking about concern for confusing the animals, so then I understand the Braisa. Meaning, it's a little bit challenging to understand why, Why the Chachamim were concerned about even goat and sheep, but whatever. The point is that clearly over here the concern is a confusion of swapping the animals. But if we're worried about like what you originally suggested about an infusion of taste, infusion of taste would not at all play a role in whether or not we're talking about a goat and a sheep or a goat and a goat. It's all gonna be the same infusion of taste. So alamai al karchach mebnei tarovas gufen hu daaser aval tarovas tamim shari. So the Gemara says, okay. So now, if we're saying that the only issue of the brisa is that we're worried that we're going to confuse the animals and that there's no concern about infusion of taste, so lema tavit yufta derav. So now, what happens is that the brisa, if anything, is going against the sheet of Rav, meaning Rav says Recha Milsa, that the aroma that wafts in an oven from one food to another food is going to create a transfer. Now what we're saying is that the only concern that the Brisa is having is that we may walk out with the wrong animal. But the Brisa is not worried about transfer of taste at all. If this is correct, so now it comes out that the Brisa no longer supports Rav, but just the opposite. It challenges, it seems to refute Rav's position. So I'm Rav Yirmiyach, but my skin and could go and show Salabishte Kederos. So the Gemara says, well, no, what we could do is that in defense of Rav, what we could suggest is that what you ended up doing is you ended up cooking it in two pots, meaning one oven but two separate pots. The Gemara immediately reacts, what are you talking about? This is a Karban Pesach. You can't cook it in a pot. So Ela Ema Ke'en Shtei Kederos. So the Gemara says, okay, what it means is Ke'en Shtei Kederos, meaning two sections of the oven. The two sections of the oven, right? I don't have a great way of painting a picture of this oven, but the oven is divided, and so the roasting of the Karban Pesachs are in one oven, but the ovens have compartments in them, and so therefore there's no worry about the transfer of taste. Although there would still be a worry, a concern of a transfer of the actual Karban Pesachs themselves. The Hachi Kamar, and now here's how we're going to say Pshan the Brisa. One is not allowed to cook two Karban Pesachs in one oven. Again, I say the word oven. I made this point already a couple of times. I don't literally mean an oven. It means some sort of apparatus that's got walls around it. So, but you're roasting it, obviously. So, me tarovas tamim. And the first part of the brisa, again, this is all an understanding of the brisa according to Rav. And if you're roasting it in one oven, what are we concerned about? So, tarovas tamim, taste transfer that goes from one to the other. And even if we have compartments in this oven, in this apparatus, where we're not worried about the taste transferring, but also mishum tarovas gufin. I still have to worry that when I go into this oven, I'm going to pull out the wrong Karban Pesach. And even if we're using a goat and they're using a sheep, we're worried about that as well. So in other words, a reading of the Brisa, according to Rav, is that actually there's a dual concern. There's a concern for transfer of taste if they're being cooked in the same compartment. If they are not cooked in the same compartment, so there's no worry about transfer of taste, but there's still going to be concern about transfer of the, about confusion of whose Karban Pesach is whose. Amar Rav Mari Ketanai, Rav Mari points out, we have over here Machlokes Tanayim on this very issue, Mishnah and Trumos. Haro de pas chama v'nasna al pi chavis yain shel truma. Let's say, hot bread put right over wine, the wine was truma wine. So is the aroma of the wine going to be absorbed by the bread? If in fact that's the case, so now this bread is infused with truma, can't be eaten by non-Kohanim. Rav Meir Oser, Rav Yehuda Matir. So here we have a machlokes tanayim. And Rav Yossi takes a middle position. Matir b'shal chitim v'oser b'shal sa'orin. If it's wheat, he says it's mutter. And if the bread is made up of barley, he's going to say it's aser mimei sha'as sa'orim shel avos. Because barley is more absorbent. Anyway, my love tanayi. Demar savarecha la milsihi umar savarecha milsihi. So now what comes out over here in this mission, Trumos, is that this machlokes Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda is clearly balancing on this point as to whether or not aroma is significant or not significant. So the Levi vade tanayi. So according to Levi, yeah, that's correct. The way you just presented it is the correct understanding of the Brisa. So Rav Nach, I'm sorry, Rav Nema tanayi, and according to Rav now, So can we also suggest it's a machlokas tanaima melcharab de kuleyama recha melsehi? Rav will say no. Rav will say that everyone's of the position that aroma is significant. And lav idmar la dahi amar Rav bar Rav Chana amar Reish Lakish bepas chama vechavas psucha divrei alkol aser. Now, if the bread is hot and the barrel of wine is open, so their aroma is going to now transfer the taste from the wine into the bread. And according to everyone, it's going to be aser. Bepas lo nes vechavas megufa divrei alkol muter. If the bread is cold and the wine barrel is closed and sealed, so then it's going to be mutter, according to everyone. Lo nechelku. Where is the debate of the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Lo nechelku ela bepas chama vechavis chasuma. Pas sonenis vechavis psucha. It's where either the bread is hot, but the barrel is sealed, or the bread is cold and the barrel is open. Vehanami kepas chama vechavis psucha damya. But over here, in our oven, so if we're going to strike an analogy between roasting, cooking two things in an oven side by side, so if anything, that's comparable to the case of hot bread over an open barrel. And so therefore, what Rav will tell you is in such a circumstance, there simply is no debate. So at this point in time, the Gemara has now presented to us a machlokas between Rav and Levi, whether we say Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. As forecasted earlier, so Rashi for a second time today is going to be paskening. Rashi dibra maschal amel chad de kolei amar recha milsa. Rashi writes va'af agav about five lines down in that Rashi. Va'af agav de kaimel. And generally speaking, we are of the position de kaima tanai kavase de rav hilchasa kavase de levi. And even though we're going to see a brisa that supports the position of Rav. So Rashi writes over here that the halacha falls like Levi. Now that's interesting. So why should that be? Rashi goes on to write, because if you recall, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a similar machlokas regarding Recha, whether aroma is in fact going to transfer taste. Machlokas between Abai and Rava, the Kamlei Rava, Bishita said the Levi. And it happens to be that Rava's position lines up with Levi's position over here. V'amar Recha lav milsehi, espousing the viewpoint that aroma is not significant. Now we know that when you have a machlokes between Abai and Rava, the halacha falls like Rava. And v'cheni b'tshuvas ha'gaonim, and Rashi points out earlier that he's not the first one who makes this point. The Gaonim already made this point as well. Anyway, Rashi over here is of the position that Recha lav milsa, that it's simply not significant. Again, talking about scratching the surface of this topic, what the Gemara never discusses let me set this up better. The Gemara discussed cooking two items in an oven together, and the Gemara wants to know whether or not the aroma from one goes into another. Again, machlokas between Rav and Levi. Rav says it does, and Levi says it does not. And again, we just saw Rashi paskin like Levi. That doesn't mean, again, I just want to reiterate, that doesn't mean we know what the halacha is at this point in time. It just simply means that we now have at least the basics in order to have a intelligent conversation. However, what the Gemara does not discuss at any point in time is zeh acher zeh. What if we don't cook the two items in the oven at the same time, but what if we cook them one after another in the same oven? What would the Gemara say under those circumstances? Also, absent from the Gemara, any discussion regarding steam that comes off of the item, what's called an halacha zeah. It's an interesting discussion in of itself why the Gemara does not discuss it. However, the Rishonim already discuss what about steam coming off the item and going into the walls of the oven, which of course happens. And is that something to take into consideration? The simple answer is yes. Again, there's just lots to discuss and a limited amount of time in terms of the context of the daf. We're going to finish up to the Mishnah. Tani Rav Kahana Berei de Rav Chinana, picking up right where we left off in the Gemara. The following brisa was taught by Rav Kahana. And the Rav Chinna Saba, sorry. Pasha afa im sli betanur, if I have bread that is baked with meat in an oven, asa lachla b'kutcha, you can't eat that bread with kutach. Meaning what happens now is that there was a transfer of taste from the meat into the bread based on Recha. And again, Rashi just pointed out, this rice is clearly going like Rav, and therefore now the bread is going to be asur. Ha'u benisa di'itve b'hade bisra, there was fish that was roasted in the same oven with meat, as Rava mi parzika lemichla bekutcha. And so Rava says you can't eat this fish now with milk. In other words, the fish, from a halachic standpoint, is parv. In other words, it's not fleshik, it's not milchik. And in general, you're allowed to eat fish together with milk. But because the fish was roasted in the same oven with meat, so once again, based on Recha, so now the taste of the meat goes into the fish now, and so the fish now is fleshik, and you're not allowed to eat it together with milk. Marber Rav Ashi Amar Afilu B'Milchanami Asur Mishum Dekash L'Recha U'Davar Acher. And the Gemara has one final line over here before the Mishnah, and that is, if the fish in of itself, even with just a little bit of salt, you're not allowed to eat. Why? Because fish that is imbued with the taste of meat is going to be bad. Number one, for your breath. And number two, for Davar Acher. Rashi over here writes, Saras, it is simply unhealthy to eat fish that was infused with the taste of meat. Okay, and the Gemara over here is introducing us to a novel idea, and that is that based on the times of the Gemara where they understood that fish infused with the taste of meat is going to be medically unsound, so the Gemara over here tells us that it is prohibited to eat the two together. Not because there's an isser in the Torah, but simply because it's the Gemara describes it as being unhealthy. Whether or not that is able to change based on our understanding of medicine and the effects of meat and fish. So great, another huge discussion, which we're not going to have right now. Anyway, let's quickly recap our daf today. Today's daf, just in terms of your day, in terms of Isser V'Heter, it's jam-packed. But just in terms of reviewing, the Mishnah tells us that the Karban Pesach has to be roasted, as did the first Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if you have any kind of contact between the Karban Pesach and the walls of the oven, so that's going to create a problem. Now, in terms of area of contact, so Kedei Klipa. If a drop falls from the Karban Pesach onto the oven, back onto the Karban Pesach, Kedei Netila, you have to take off an inch. If a drop goes onto flour, going back onto the Karban Pesach, Kedei Kemitza, right? A certain amount. And then the Mishnah talks about smearing the Karban Pesach with Truma oil, which can now, the Karban Pesach can only be eaten by Kohanim, or it's smeared with Maaser Sheni oil, which everybody can eat in Yerushalayim. You just simply can't charge for your contribution of the Maaser Sheni oil. First major topic of today, and I involve them in Aleph, Ila'a Gavar Tasa Gavar. When I have cold going into hot going into cold, so which one is going to dominate? That which is going in, or that which it's going into? Machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. We passing like Shmuel, Tasa Gavar. Rashi says it on the Amud Aleph. That is the clear halacha. So that means that Cham L'soch Sonin, that when hot goes into cold, so there's not going to be a full transfer. However, the Gemara at the end of the Sugya points out, even though there's not a full transfer, but there will be a moment in time where it's going to take for the item to cool down. Ad the maker, Bala Porta. There is a small amount of Bliya, a Kedei Klipa. Next big topic that we cover, 9 Vavam and Aleph, Maliach Kerosech Kavash Kemevoshal. That if we're talking about a significant amount of salt or an extended period of soaking, so that is going to substitute for either roasting or cooking respectively. And so it has to be bathed in salt, like you are trying to extract the blood. And according to Rashi, it has to be soaked in vinegar. Again, not all Rishonim agree with Rashi. The Gemara also on the bottom of the Amud says there are other considerations as well in terms of transfer. In other words, things that substitute as transfer. If, let's say, the chicken that falls into the dip is already been cooked or roasted, so it softens it. So even in a cold contact, there's still going to be a small amount of transfer. Also, if there are cracks in the meat, that's also going to create a full transfer. And on top of that, if the meat has been spiced and rubbed, it softens the meat, also creating a full transfer. On the Amud Beis, we tackle another major issue in terms of Yoredeya, and that is whether or not aroma is going to be transferring taste. Machlokus between Rav and Levi. Rav says that aroma does in fact transfer taste. Levi says that aroma recha is not going to transfer taste. It's not significant. The Gemara quoted in Mishnah. Seemingly the Mishnah is going to be a wonderful support for Levi. The Gemara defends Rav. The Gemara cites a brisa that supports Rav. And Rashi in today's daf passes the halacha to be like Levi. Recha lav milsehi. Rashi aligns this Gemara with the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, where there it's a machlokes between Abai and Rava. Rava takes the position Recha Lav Milsehi. Rashi paskins Recha Lav Milsehi. Again, that's not the it's not the bottom line halacha, because we have to take into consideration that not everyone's in agreement with Rashi. We have to take into consideration steam. The Gemara does not talk about cooking two items in an oven sequentially, zeh or zeh. Okay, there's a lot more to cover that goes well beyond. And finally, the last points of the that we made today in today's daf is that if you cook fish and meat together, so whether or not there is a transfer of taste, and whether or not I can eat the fish together with milk, that's going to be dependent on the machlokes between Rav and Levi. But then the Gemara drops one line before concluding, and that is that fish cooked together with meat, you can't eat the fish. Why? Because it's not healthy. And the Gemara obviously is concerned for our health. And so the Gemara says that the fish by itself cannot be eaten. Again, what the practice is in terms of practical halacha, major discussion, but the Gemara says you cannot eat the fish.